Expected something in life only to be disappointed. Maybe you went to a restaurant that was hyped up and everybody talked about how great this restaurant was going to be and you went there and it was not all that. Or maybe somebody told you about a movie and this movie was this incredible movie and then you went to go and see it and you were like, this movie was not all that people said it was. Or maybe there was a special day. And there was something specific that you wanted on that special day, and you kind of hinted around it, like, hey, this is what I want. Then the special day came, and you didn't get what you were hoping to get. Or maybe you took a test in school, or maybe you had a project, and you just know that you were going to nail this project, you were going to get an A on this test. That's what you were expecting, but then you got the results of the test or of the project back. And you did anything but nail the test. I think there's all been times in our lives where we had expectations, but we've ended up disappointed. When I was in college, I played on our college's basketball team my freshman year. And when I came in that freshman year, the guy that played my position, the starting point guard, he was a senior and he averaged over 20 points a game. And the dude was a stud. He was a great basketball player. And needless to say, with this guy on the team, I wasn't getting a whole lot of playing time. At the end of the season, we had our exit interviews, and the coach told me, he was like, hey, you know, this guy, he's not going to be on the team anymore. I don't know what's going to happen, but I can see you making a big impact on our team. So I'm feeling pretty good about myself going into the following year. And during that summer, I didn't put in as much work as I probably should have. I'm still feeling good about myself. We had tryouts for our team. At that point, we didn't have scholarships. So every year, you had to try out to be on the basketball team. And the coach kept about 15 or 16 players. For those of you that know nothing about basketball, there are 5 starters on a basketball team. So there are 5 starters, and he kept 15 or 16 total. And he usually kept a rotation of about 8 or 9 players. So if you were like top 9, you played all the time. Now going into the season, going into tryouts at least, I'm thinking, you know, I'm probably like 6th or 7th man. Like I'm probably not starting, but maybe the guy gets hurt and then I'm going to be starting by the end of the year. I was pretty confident about that. And we have a few days of tryouts and everything is going fine. I feel like I'm doing all right. And then coach calls me in and he said, just want you to know that right now you're about player 12 or 13. Now, if you're anything less than player 9, you're basically a glorified water boy. So he's like, you're player 12 or 13. And he very kindly and tactfully tells me that I really haven't improved much since the season before. And needless to say, my passion for being on the basketball team dropped significantly. I had this expectation, but it wasn't met. I think there are times in all of our lives where we have unmet expectations. In Mark chapter 5, there was a woman that had a significant unmet expectation. She was very sick. She visited multiple doctors, and she spent all of her resources for a cure that she could never find. If you don't have a copy of the scriptures, we're going to be in Mark chapter 5, and the scriptures will be on the screen this morning. But Mark chapter 5 and verse number 24, it says this. It says, and Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. There was a huge crowd that was around Jesus. There was something about Jesus that was just attractive. People just wanted to be close to him. People just wanted to be near him. And the interesting thing is people that didn't even believe like Jesus believed, they just wanted to be close to him. He was attractive. The people thronged him, Mark 5 says. And verse 25, it says, there was a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years. When you study out the text here, this issue of blood is referring to a constant bleeding that this woman had. For 12 years. For 12 years, this woman had a uterine condition that caused her to bleed constantly. And on top of the physical pain and suffering that you can imagine that would go along with that, there was also some cultural implications that went along with this as well. There were some Jewish laws that addressed physical hygiene. And God had designed these laws to protect the people, to encourage physical health. But these laws, sadly, were hijacked by people. And people used these laws that were meant to help the health and hygiene of the people. They used these laws to be things that they would throw judgment at people. According to the law, which you can read about in Leviticus chapter 15, a woman's monthly cycle during that time, she was considered unclean. It's Leviticus 15. She was considered unclean for 7 days. In fact, anywhere she sat or laid was considered unclean as well. And if anyone were to touch where she would sit or lay down, they too would be considered unclean and would have to have a ritual bathing. And according to the law, after the 7 day period ended, there was an additional day that you had being unclean. And remember, this was for physical hygiene and health. But people would use the law as a source of judgment. And they would justify their mistreatment of people by looking back to the law. For 12 years, this woman had been defined by the law as unclean. For 12 years, this woman had to live in solitude away from everybody else. For 12 years, she was in isolation. For 12 years, she had to stay away from her friends. For 12 years, she couldn't go near her family. Can you imagine the emotional pain that this woman was going through being in isolation? And this pain was not because of anything she had done. This pain was because of a physical infirmity. When we read this, this is where that woman is. Emotional pain, physical pain, suffering. Verse 26, she had suffered many things of many physicians and spent all that she had. She did the same thing we would do if we had a physical health condition for years. We would go to any doctor that could possibly see us. We would spend all the money that we had. And look what happened. She was nothing better, but rather grew worse. Verse 27. When she had heard of Jesus, she came in the press behind and touched his garment. This woman had heard of this guy named Jesus. She had heard of him. She didn't know a whole lot about him. But this woman thinks that if I can just get to Jesus, she believed that Jesus had the power to heal her. So she goes up and she touches his garment. Verse number 28. This is what she thought. If I touch but his garment, his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway, the fountain of her blood was dried up. And she felt in her body that she was healed of the plague. Now for this woman to go into the crowd of people, it was risky. Because if this woman was identified as the person that was unclean, if an unclean person was coming into a group of people, she would be publicly humiliated and her family would be publicly humiliated as well. Her family's name would be disgraced. So this woman is risking a whole lot to go and not just see Jesus, but to touch Jesus and to get around the crowds of people. But it's interesting, in verse 29, immediately after she touched him, the fountain of her blood was dried up. This woman instantly was healed of her plague. Immediately, the thing that had plagued her for 12 years was gone. Verse number 30, imagine what this woman's feeling. Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that the virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, who touched my clothes? This disciple said to him, thou seest the multitude thronging thee and sayest thou, who touched me? Get it? There's like a huge crowd of people and Jesus is walking. All of a sudden he stops. He's like, somebody touched me. The disciples are like, what do you mean somebody touched you? Of course somebody touched you. There's a bunch of people around you. But Jesus wasn't concerned about the crowd. He was concerned about the individual. And in your life, you may feel like you've been lost in the crowd. You may feel like you're just one of billions of people in this world. But I want you to know that God cares personally for you and your needs and what you're struggling with and what you're going through. God doesn't just say, oh, there's a church full of people. No, he looks at you personally because there is a God that leaves no one behind. A God that cares for you. in an incredible act of courage, in verse 32, he looks around to see her that had done this thing. Now, if I'm this woman, and I know what I'm risking, when Jesus turns around and is looking for me, I just kind of hide in the crowd. I just kind of walk away. But an incredible act of courage. Look what this woman does. She was fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her. She came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. This is a big scene. Everybody's gathered around. She goes before him saying, God, this is what's happened to me. Jesus, she tells him the whole truth. Maybe she talks about the emotional pain that she had. Maybe she talks about the first day she found out that she had this illness. Maybe she tells him all the physicians that she went and saw. But in an incredible act of courage, she goes boldly before Jesus. And she says, this is my story. Now look how Jesus responds. This is incredible. And he said unto her, daughter. He doesn't call her unclean. He doesn't call her loner. He doesn't call her outcast. He doesn't call her by what the law would call her. He uses a family term. He says, daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. While everybody looked at this woman with judgment, Jesus looked at this woman with love. While everybody looked at this woman as unclean, in the eyes of Jesus, he says, you, because of your faith, you are my daughter. Jesus says, you are healed. Why? Because of your faith. Now you may be in here and you may classify yourself as somebody that's not religious at all. And you say, yes, that woman had faith, but I don't have faith. Faith is for religious people. Faith is for Christians. But the reality is that everybody in the world has faith of some type. In fact, faith is not just a religious term. Faith is actually, it's a Latin word that means trust or reliance. Richard Dawkins, the person who's the world's most famous atheist, this is what he says. He says, an atheist is someone who believes. What does belief mean? Belief is another word, it's a synonym for trust. It's reliance. Richard Dawkins says, an atheist is someone who has faith. They believe. What do they believe? Where is their faith directed? That there is nothing beyond the natural physical world, no supernatural creative intelligence lurking behind the observable universe. So even the world's most famous atheist would say that in atheism, there requires some faith. Now, you can direct your hope to atheism. You can direct your hope to the idea that there is no God. But if you do that, if you don't believe that there isn't a God, or you believe that there's a God that you can't be, you can't connect with, there's really no hope. Hang with me for a second. Because that would say that we're all here on accident. And an accident has no point. It has no purpose at all. And if there is no God, it doesn't matter how much you try to put order and structure into your life, you will continue to feel like an accident. Because essentially, your life is meaningless. Essentially, there's no point. Because if all this happened on accident, then there's no point to any of this. And when you have to be intellectually honest with yourself, you have no purpose in life. And I want to tell you, that's pretty hopeless. Now you can go on one end of the spectrum and say, I don't have any faith, I'm an atheist or whatever, which really you direct your faith somewhere, but this is ultimately hopeless. Then you could go to the other side of the spectrum and you could say, I have faith in religion, I have faith in everything that I do, I have faith in all of my good works, and in your worldview, one day you'll stand before God and you're going to have all your good works on one side and your bad works on the other, and you hope that the good works outweigh your bad works, and then you can get in. Then it's like high five and Peter, I'm in heaven, okay? But here's the problem with that. All the good stuff that you do, it doesn't take away the bad stuff that you do. It doesn't take away the sin. And that's hopeless too, because we know that at our core, there's a lot of issues that we have, and because of our sin, we're not going to be able to have a relationship with God. We're not going to be able to spend eternity in heaven. So you have two extremes, and at the end of the day, they're both hopeless. And then Jesus walks in. And Jesus says, I want to give you purpose. I love you. I have a plan for you. I have something in store for your life. You can place your faith in something that's ultimately hopeless, or you can place your faith in Jesus. And that is how you become a Christian. Now, last week we kicked off this series, part one of this series, Rescued. And we talked about how if we're going to be rescued, we have to stop hiding those hidden parts that we think are hidden. And when we stop hiding, we can find the acceptance that Jesus offers. But that's really only the beginning of being healed from our hurts, our hang-ups, and our habits in life that hold us back. Because we all have them. In Mark chapter 5, this woman took two, I wish I could call them easy steps, but they're really not. This woman took two incredibly difficult steps to being rescued from her hurt in her life. In your service program, there's an outline and you can follow along. But notice what she did first of all. She invited Jesus to write the rest of her story. She invited Jesus to write the rest of her story. If this woman's life is represented by this notebook, we could say the first part of her life, there was a lot of things about her that she did. She probably wasn't a bad person. She probably was a good person. We could write in here the good things that she did. We could write in here about her family. We could write in here the terrible day when she found out that she was sick. We could write in here all the visits that she made to the doctor. But there was a day, there was a page in her story that changed everything. And she had a God moment. And I'm praying that, like this woman had a God moment in her story, I'm praying for some of us today that today will be the God moment in our life. This woman came to Jesus, and she didn't just come for physical healing. It was more than that. Because Jesus says this, he says, your faith hath made thee whole. It's more than just a physical healing, it's a spiritual healing. What this woman was doing is, she wasn't just coming to Jesus to be physically healed. She was inviting Jesus to write the rest of her story. She was giving Jesus her life and saying, Jesus, write my story. I want to ask you a question. Are you allowing God to write the story of your life? Are you allowing God to write the story of your life? You can never be rescued by God if you're constantly resisting Him. In God's grace, and in God's mercy, and in God's love, He wants to come and rescue us. But if we're constantly resisting God, there's no way we can find rescue from Him. You may be in a place in your life where right now you're struggling with a hurt or a hang-up or a habit, and you're like, God, where are you at? Like, God, when are you going to fix this situation? God, what's going on? God, why don't you intervene here? And in our minds, we say, God, when you do this, then I'll start taking my faith seriously. God, when you take this step and when this works out for me and everything kind of falls in line and I hit this stage and this happens, then I will take my next step in following you. God, I'm waiting for you. We say we're waiting for God. What if it's God that's waiting for us? God, I'm waiting for you. God, where are you at? And God says, hey, I just want you to know that I'm actually the one that's waiting for you. You see, I've shown you some things in your life. I've shown you some things in the scripture, and I want to write your story. And what we've said is we've said, God, this page of my story, I'm not letting you write. God, I'll give you part of my life. I'll give you part of this. And God says, no. This page, this is what I want. Maybe it's something that nobody knows about. Maybe it's a future decision that you have. And God's trying to write your story in this area. And you know what God wants you to do, but you're resisting. Maybe it's something on this board, or maybe it's on that board, or maybe it's on the chalkboard in the lobby. And there's some things in your life that God's saying, I want to write the story. I want to write your story. But we haven't invited God to write that part of our story. Maybe it's a relationship in your life. And God has clearly shown you, He's waiting for you to be obedient in that relationship. But we haven't invited God to write that part of our story. Maybe it's a matter of your priorities in your life. Life is so busy, isn't it? Life is so crazy. We have so, it's like, can I even breathe sometimes? And we're so busy, and God says, I know you're busy, but I want to be a priority in your life. I want you to grow in your commitment to me. And you know that God's leading you to do that, and you're just like, God, when things slow down. And what God's doing is God is waiting for us. We all have a story. We all have a notebook. We don't know how long our notebook will be. We don't know how many pages are in our notebook. But every day, part of our story is told. Every day, something is written in the notebook of our life. We have no control over how long our notebook's going to be. But we do have control over who we give the pen to write in our notebook. We do have the ability to say, God, here it is. This is going to be uncomfortable because sometimes God asks us to do hard things, right? This woman coming out in public, I can only imagine how difficult it was for her. She risked everything. But God was saying, hey, she came. She invited God to write her story, and her life was changed forever. I want to read this to you. The difference between thriving Christians and struggling Christians is that thriving Christians let God write their story, where struggling Christians try to write their own story. The difference between thriving Christians and struggling Christians is that thriving Christians let God write their story, where struggling Christians try to write their own story. You know, God wants you to experience real hope. God wants you to be a part of something that He is doing in this city. And I'm going to tell you this, Fairfield is a very unchurched city. Fairfield is a city where people don't go to church in droves on Sundays, if you haven't noticed. But I'm going to tell you this, I am believing that God has something great for this city. And I'm believing that God is going to do something in this city that 10, 20, 30 years from now, we're going to look back and say, that was a God thing. But you know where it starts? It starts when a group of people that are passionate, that are serious about God, say, I want to be a part of what God's doing. I'm going to have some faith. I'm willing to be uncomfortable, and I'm going to let God write the story of this city, because there are people that are outside of the walls that are waiting for us. There are people that are outside of here that are wanting real hope, and they're just waiting for somebody to tell them. They're just waiting for it, and I'm going to say that let Calvary be a place where, is our church perfect? No. I'm the pastor, and I don't even like everything that happens here. We're a bunch of people. We have issues. This place is never going to be perfect. If you're looking for the perfect church, don't go to it because you're going to mess it up. But we need to be a group of people that will have faith and that will believe God, that God can do the impossible. And God is inviting you, and I'm inviting you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how young you are. You may say, hey, I'm past my prime. God's done with me. If you still got breath in your lungs, God is not done with you. God still has something for you, and we need to be a group of people that will invite God to write the story of our lives and write the story of this church, so this church can be around decades to come and 100 years from now. When the history of Fairfield is being written, they will write Calvary Baptist Church in the history of the city. Because there was a group of people that loved other people. There was a group of people that made a difference in the city. And God is inviting all of us to be a part of the much larger story that He's writing for the city. I didn't plan on saying that. I don't know where that came from. How many of you in here are Warriors fans? Warriors fans. How many of you pretend to be Warriors fans because everybody else is a Warriors fan? Okay, I see those hands. Cavs in seven, you heard it from me first, Warriors fans. I'm going to be watching the NBA Finals, and I'm also the sports nerd that reads all the articles about the NBA Finals, and I watch all the press conferences about the NBA Finals. So as far as I'm concerned, when the buzzer goes off, the game isn't over. An hour after the game, when all the press conferences have happened, then that's when the game is over. You can ask my wife. She just loves it. And if you go to one of the games, and you have an extra ticket, and you love Jesus, just want you to know, I might be available for that ticket. But 100 years from now, as big of a sports fan as I am, it really won't matter who won the NBA Finals. Man, that hurts to say that. It's not a big deal. It won't matter what kind of car I drove 100 years from now. It won't matter what kind of clothes I wear, or what will matter is what's done for eternity. What matters is what's done for the gospel. What matters is if we will allow God to write our story. Is if we will give God the pen and say, God, I don't really know the future. I don't know everything about it, but I'm willing to give you the pen and let you write something, and let you do something bigger than I can ever do in myself. Because God wants to write a story for your life where you will impact people, where you will make a difference, where people will be impacted because of your life. It's not about us doing more for God. It's about giving God more access into our life so He can do more in us. And it's only when God does more in us that He can do more through us. It's not about us doing more for God. It's not about me saying, okay, God, I'm going to do all these things for you. It's not about that. It's about us giving God the pen and saying, God, I'm going to give you more access into my life so you can do something in me. And as you do something in me, as you do more in me, then in turn, you're going to do more through me. The woman, first of all, she took the difficult step of inviting Jesus to write the story. She said, here's the pen. You can write it. But second of all, she let God define her. She let God define her. Notice, verse 34, he said to her, it's Jesus, he says, daughter. Can we say that together? Ready? Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Her whole life, for the last 12 years, she heard sick. She heard troubled. She was defined by everybody else. She was labeled. She was unclean. For years, this is what she hears, and she believes it about herself. Then she comes to Jesus. And Jesus says, I'm going to define who you really are. I'm going to call you daughter. Wow. This is who you really are. You are not what everybody says you are. For the rest of your story, every single page of your life, woman, you know who you are? Your daughter. You're not unclean. You're not isolated. You're not a loner. Every page of your life is stamped by the word daughter. You are not how you feel. You are not what other people say about you. You are not what happened to you in your childhood. Only the one who designed you has the power to define you. Only the one who designed you has the power to define you. Can we say this together? Ready? Only the one who designed you has the power to define you. I want to make this personal. Instead of saying you, I want us to say me. Because the world we live in, all these things try to define us. Let's say this together, but instead of you, let's put me. Ready? Only the one who designed has the power to define. He's the only one. He's the only one that has the power to define you. If you define yourself in the court of people's opinions about you, you're going to have really high highs and you're going to have really low lows. Because in the court of other people's opinions, one person over here thinks you're the greatest thing in the world, and the next person over here thinks you're a dirtbag. And it's like one minute it's like, yes, I feel so good about myself, and the next minute it's like, I'm like the worst person ever. I mean, this is, life is terrible. Let me give you an example. You post something on Instagram or Facebook, and you get 100 likes on your picture. Hashtag best day ever, right? 100 people liked it. It's getting quiet now. It's getting personal, right? And it's like, yes, this was great. Why? Because 100 people looked at something you posted and your incredible photography ability, and you just lined everything up just perfect. Like, how could you get a sunset picture that good? You know, I mean, it's like regular sunsets don't even look that good. But that person looked at you, looked at your picture, and they said, yes, you are good. Yes, that is awesome. What we've just done, we don't mean to do it, it's unintentional, but we allow other people to define us. We allow other people to determine how we feel about ourselves. That's why when you don't have a post that has a lot of likes, you delete it. That's why when certain things happen in our lives, it's like, oh man, I'm just feeling it. I picked on you guys. Let me pick on myself for a second. I like to exercise. I pay attention to my health. Now, some of you would have thought after last week's message that I just eat a lot of Polish dogs and drink cherry Cokes all day. I know some of you thought that. In a dream world, yes. But it's easy for me to define myself based on my exercise performance, based on how good of a workout I can do, based on how my clothes fit, based on what the scale says. I don't know about you guys, but I have a love-hate relationship with a scale, and a lot of times it's a lot more hate than love. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, as silly as it sounds, I let those things define me. And I let those things determine how I feel about myself. This is a great day or this is a terrible day. What? And I do the same thing. It's why we have an improper view of ourselves. Sometimes it's why we live the way we do. Well, I'm going to do this because that's what everybody thinks already. When you put your faith in Jesus, he defines you as his child. He defines you as accepted. He defines you as significant. He defines you as love. And it really has nothing to do with your behavior, but everything to do with his grace. This is who you are. You are not what's done to you. You are not what's happened to you. You are not your past. You are who the designer says you are, because only the designer has the power to define you. How are we rescued this morning? We're in part two of the series. How are we rescued? When we stop letting everybody else, everything else, even ourselves, tell us who we are. And we let the designer define us. We let the designer define who we are. Can you imagine how powerful it would be if every day you lived like you were loved, you lived like you were accepted, and you lived like you were significant? You know where that's found? In who Jesus says you are. When we allow God to define us, and when we give him the pen, and that's the hard part, isn't it? Man, the defining part, that's good stuff, you know? Yes. But that idea of the pen, of letting, just inviting God to write the rest of your story, that's hard. But we're rescued from the hurts, from the hangups, from the habits in our life when we take those two difficult steps. Let's have a word of prayer together. God leaves no one behind, and that includes you.